Good morning, everyone. Yesterday was a very big day in the history of Ananda because we debuted up in Nevada City the final version of a feature movie that's been made about Ananda. We were involved in the making of it. It wasn't that someone came to us. We had the idea of doing it, but we did it in a professional way. And about 500 people came and filled three theaters, three of the theaters in the local theater in Nevada City, and watched the final version of the movie. It's called Finding Happiness. Many of you saw it here in April when we did a private showing for our members. Since then, it's been edited one more time. And movie making is quite an interesting art. I was speaking with Viraj, who's a singer, very good singer, and I said, you know, as a singer, you realize that there's a lot of notes in this song, and you don't think, oh, I'll just get some of them right. You know, you realize that every single one of them has to be just right, or else it doesn't work. I'm a writer of words, and I don't think, well, if half the words in this paragraph make sense, the other half are just okay. Every art is the same. In filmmaking, you're going frame by frame. And to the outsider, you think, well, some of these frames are a little lousy. What difference does it make? They go by just like that. But true filmmakers understand that every single frame, like every note, like every word, has to be just so. So from last spring till now, they fixed it. 4 minutes they altered in the movie. But it just made all the difference. And so it'll be a very interesting thing to see what happens, because it's quite a solid statement about the essence of this work that many of us have been involved in. Some of you are walking in for the first time. It's very subtle to put self-realization into a movie. As even the people who are promoting it for us have begun to understand, this is not about a place. The place is the window into a way of life, and that way of life is with God at the center. What happens then? And in fact, the people who are selling the movie for us, marketing it now, were saying this is very confusing, because usually you just have a movie and all you're selling is the movie. He said, now we have a movie and we're trying to sell the movie, but we're also trying to sell all these ideas. And so it's a very complicated project, the way he was putting it. And it's the truth. And listening today to our reading, Do You Need a Guru? And guru, in many ways, is the essence of the path that we call Ananda, even though we don't necessarily start there. And in the film, the Finding Happiness movie, we talk about organic gardening, and we talk about education for life, and we talk about the power of technology and the influence of consciousness and just all kinds of fascinating ideas. In fact, the woman who's doing the publicity for us and trying to use all the people of Ananda to write articles, to give interviews, after just person after person was being interviewed, Gyandev, who's the founder, one of the founding members of the Yoga Alliance, which is 40,000 yoga teachers in America, Bharat, who has a global reputation for just transforming nature education in the world, she said, I think there's more creative intelligence in every square foot of Ananda than I've ever seen anywhere in the world. And when she made that remark, I responded by saying, it's not that, it's not the people here, it's what the people are doing. And I remember Swami Kriyananda has often said, if you go somewhere and you meet a few nice people, I remember many years ago, when in my late teens and early 20s, I used to work in retail stores. I had no particular skills and I needed to earn money, and that was a job you could get if you could talk. That's how you make money with this. and you work in retail, and just one person comes in and kind of recognizes that you're actually a person and relates to you as if you're a human being and you have a real contact. It can just make your whole day. Just one nice person in 8 hours of just standing there exchanging money for whatever the people want. And Swamiji was saying once about Ananda that if you meet one or two nice people, you think, well, they're exceptional people. They have good karma, if you know that word. They're lucky, or whatever it might be. But when you come to a community and you meet one after another, after another, after another, it crosses your mind that it's what they're doing. Last night, we're working with very professional people, and the three people who are promoting the movie, two women and a man, they stood up and they spoke to the group because we needed all to know them. This one man was a very big Hollywood agent for like 25 years before he just got tired of that profession and he became a consultant. So he picks up jobs that he likes now. But Shivani was talking about how they're helping us, and she called all of them angels. These are our angels. And he kind of stood up in his very Hollywood way and he said, "I've been an agent in Hollywood for 25 years. I've been called a lot of things," he said. "First time anybody thought of me as an angel," he said like that. But the point is, what I was saying about it being what we're doing, and I was trying to explain that it's not just living in community. It's the practice of meditation. It's the practice of Kriya Yoga. It's the conscious desire to attune yourself to a reality greater than your own ego. And Swamiji has often emphasized this word original in the context of many things, especially in the context of artistic work. People want to be original in the work that they do, but most people are imitative in the work that they do. It may be good work, but nonetheless, it's a vision that they're picking up from around them and then modifying in some slight extent. In the early years of Ananda, people were, Swamiji was writing music, and a lot of the people who were new there also wanted to write music. And he discouraged them from writing music, which got very confusing in the communication. Oh, he just wants to do it his way. He just wants to suppress other people's creativity. But his answer was actually much more subtle. And he was trying to help them. He said, "Don't write your own music. Right now, just sing the music I've written." Now, you can certainly see how that's going to come across if you're thinking from an ordinary worldly perspective. But what he said, and it was true, he said, "What you're writing now is imitative." At that point, the singer Donovan and John Denver were both really popular. And it was just like a kind of bad copy of that music. Except that, you know, they would throw in more God and Guru words. But the vibration was exactly the same. You could substitute any words and it would still be just the same. He said, you need to get deeper into yourself and then you can really do original work. And oddly, he would say, if you sing the music that I've written, what it will do, and Swami, actually, I shouldn't emphasize the pronoun I, because Swami always said he just received that music. It was he opened himself and the vibration of that music would come to him and he would simply write it down. But it was a vibration from a higher level, and if you got in tune with that vibration, which is why we sing this repertoire of music so much, especially in this temple, because it's a doorway to a higher vibration. And what happens, you see, is when you get in tune with that, you get closer and closer, and this is the word original, to your own point of origin. And when you're acting from your own point of origin, then everything you do is original. Even if the picture looks the same, the words are the same, Swamiji has often used the very simple example. He said, what could be more cliche than the phrase, "I love you"? You know, but in the tenderness of two people's feeling for one another, they will just say, "I love you." And sometimes it's far more compelling than if they opened a Shakespeare sonnet and read it to you. You know, these are the most beautiful expressions of love. But if it comes right out of your point of origin, it's like it's never been said before. And sometimes I would listen, because I'm a wordsmith and I struggle, as we all do, between original and imitative. And sometimes I would labor over things too much, thinking that if it had been said before, if I was going to say it, I had to say it in a completely new way. But it would always come out then contrived. And then sometimes I'd look at Swami's poetry or the lyrics to one of his songs or something, and the words would just be the equivalent of "I love you." But they would be said with a connection to that vibration. Because everything we do in this world, the form that our consciousness takes is an expression of something more subtle. It's when we feel these deep realities and they finally come through us. Just that phrase, "I love you." When it really comes from respect, from appreciation, from deep perception of the worth and value of this person you're speaking to, all of that is contained in those words. And if it's really there, then you're at your point of origin. Now, the reality, you see, of coming to our point of origin also has this interesting other aspect, which is the closer we come to our point of origin, the less separate we are and the more unified our consciousness becomes. Unified with the divine, unified with creation, and unified with each other. Master often uses the example to try to explain the apparent contradiction between unity and separation. He would use the image of a gas stove and how there's just one source of fuel, but then it comes through and then it breaks into all those little separate jets. And so it looks like there's all these little separate pieces of flame, but really they all start from the same point and they're burning the same fuel. And when they withdraw, they all go back to the same place. But while they're all burning, they all look different. And depending on the oxygen mix or whatever you're looking at, they all look like they're a little different color and a little different shape. But they're really just manifestations of one source. So are we more ourselves when we stretch ourselves out to the tiniest little tip over here and insist that this is really who I am, this little tiny tip of this flame? Or are we more ourselves when we stand at the origin point, and even if we extend all the way out, nonetheless, we have access to all of that. This big elm tree sits in the middle of our community. It's like the guru tree of the community there. It's just enormous, and it stretches way across the courtyard. You're there a long time, and you finally realize you're still under the same tree. And sometimes it's really touching to sort of go see where that what begins and how far it goes out. But no extended leaf, no matter how beautiful it is, and if you live in certain of the apartments, you're especially the second floor apartments on the inner courtyard with the balcony, you get in very intimate relationships with some of these treetops. Where I live, on our second floor room, it's not the guru tree, but it's one of his minions. It's a completely different tree, and it's there. And my second floor balcony, I'm right in those leaves. This right there, I have a very close relationship with the top of that tree. But I go down sometimes, and I see the whole base of it. That's where it really comes from. And is that leaf any more itself? Because it says, look at me, I'm a leaf. How did you ever get to be a leaf? How did it occur to you to be a leaf? And could you ever be a leaf if there was no tree? And how much powerful is that elm tree because of all those roots? If it wasn't for all those roots, that little tiny bit couldn't even exist. And in our particular culture, I mean, especially American culture, but the whole West right now, where we're just so, especially Americans, this is our strength too. We have just this incredible, I can do it attitude. And Master loved that. Master said he loved being in America because Americans, partly because, as he put it, they didn't really know how hard it was to realize God. They knew nothing about karma and reincarnation. So he arrived and said, you can realize God. And Americans just said, sure, we can do it. And then we went to try to build a machine to make it go faster, you know. When Swamiji was being talked about Kriya, and there's a certain coolness you feel in your throat when you're doing the Kriya breath correctly, and Swami suggested to Master, what if I used a little peppermint oil and then it would make my throat feel even cooler? And Master just laughed and laughed. He said, you Americans, you just can't help yourself. If there's a way to do it better, I'm going to figure out how to do it. But you see, there's a tremendous power in that too. And America as a whole is a very cooperative country. We're used to working together. And it's a heritage. We all arrived here and we had to build a country by ourselves, and we had to band together. There was no other way to do it. But nonetheless, we prize our individuality. And that individuality is a tremendous asset on the spiritual path, because you can't even see the spiritual path unless you have the courage to think a little outside of it. We were just talking about many of the people we know who are really young and at the beginning of their lives. I remember a young man in his 20s I was talking to, and I was urging upon him a slightly more daring attitude toward his life. And he was about 23. And he told me that he was concerned because if he did that, then his IRA account, he would fall behind in his IRA account. I said, that's your retirement account, right? I mean, forgive me, but I know now what an IRA is. But then it was like, I said, First, maybe you want to have a life. What do you think? But it was like, where is the spirit? Where is the spirit of adventure? Where's the idea that I can live from my own origin point and far from weakening me? If I separate myself out from the herd, I will be able to be who I really am intended to be. You know, interestingly, that's where our culture is going anyway, especially those of us who live here. We know this. It's just creativity. I mean, just profession after profession is just wiped out overnight. David took many photographs for many years when you used to have film and you had it developed. And we had a very sweet relationship with this business in downtown Palo Alto. This family ran this film developing business and vaporized. You know, just one day, they just almost overnight. And I, you know, my heart, it's very hard. People are just, they have a world that they're going to just be in. But if you're not really in yourself, if you're not really in the power of who you are, and the more you get in the power of who you are, you really realize that the power of who you are is to let go of what you're not. And what we are not is separate. What we are not is individual. What we are not is really the origin of our own ideas. Swami Kriyananda, who hands down was the most prolific, creative, extraordinary person, you know, music, architecture, leadership, the art of working with people, books. He died on the 20th of April, just this last few months ago, just this year. The last book he wrote it, let me think when he would have finished that. He finished that in the middle of March. The book, it hasn't even been published yet. It's called Love Perfected, Life Divine. And he took this novel that had been written 100 years ago about the soulmate connection between a man and a woman. And he rewrote the novel because it was a great plot, but she didn't understand the principles as well as he did. So he took her plot and then he rewrote it with a master's understanding, completely outside the box from anything he'd ever done in his life, ever. Just a totally different book. It's fiction. It's a romantic story, practically the last thing you'd ever think about with him. He was not sentimental, let's put it that way. He sat once with a whole group of us at the table. We were all married couples, all happily married couples. And he looked at us and he said, oh, he said, once that delusion is gone, meaning the desire for a mate, you can't understand why it ever attracted you. He just shook his head like that. He said, I know, you're all here, you're all married, but you'll see. He just shook his head like that. Then the last book he writes is about human love. But it's about human love as a pathway to true divine love. And that when that book comes out, it's a treasure. It's somewhere else. 87 years old, 2 months away from just exiting the body and going into the infinite, and he's still just finding new realities. But the most remarkable thing about his life, constantly he would say this to us, he would give us these long lists sometimes of all the things that he'd done. And again, you had to understand him from the right angle. He would say, what a boastful man. But what he was really trying to tell us is, just surrender to the divine. Just find those who know how to do what you are trying to do, which is how he described his relationship with Yogananda. 22 years old, 1948, he read Autobiography of a Yogi. He recognized Master's picture. He felt Yogananda's vibration. He crossed the country on a Greyhound bus, which in itself is a notable achievement, 5 days and nights across the country. He finally got himself to Yogananda. The first words he said, I want to be your disciple. And Swamiji himself said he never dreamed ever that he would say words like that to any person. But when he saw it, when he saw what he was looking for, when he saw someone who was truly understanding the nature of reality, he didn't hesitate for a moment. And from that day to his last breath, that's the way he lived. I am a disciple. And as a disciple, he said, Master, guide me. And he would give us these long list of his accomplishments. And then he would say, but the secret of this, you see, is that I haven't done it at all. said, I've put my consciousness at the spiritual eye and I've asked God and Guru. And it's just there. The last books he wrote so fast. Love Perfected, Life Divine, the book I just referred you to. I happened to be in India when he was writing it. And we would joke. He would write faster than we could read. You know, just having to keep up with his manuscripts. You know, we'd stop and sleep. And the next day you'd come, and there'd be a pile like this. When he was writing the Bhagavad Gita, he would write 10 pages a day, very dense pages of commentary. We'd go to sleep. Next morning you'd come, and who knows when he did it. There'd be another stack of pages like this, and he'd come in the morning, have you read it yet? You know, you're just barely have your coffee in your hand like this. Trying to just, but it was effortless for him, literally effortless. Because it's always flowing, the life is always flowing. That elm tree is always drawing that power. You know, the less sophisticated examples of creation have a lot to teach us. We can't be as unconscious as they are, but we can learn to be as effortless as they are in their relationship. The natural world just lives in harmony with itself and each other. It's only when we get our egos involved, what about me, what about me? Oh, excuse me, what about me, what about me? Just the other day, Divine Mother played a little trick on me, and a friend of mine was talking about something that was going to be so positive for her, but the consequences of it were not so positive for me. It was just a small situation. Oh my God, this wave of energy just came from somewhere. And it said, well, she's happy, but what about me? Just like that. And it was like a poison gas, you know? And all of a sudden, I just felt all this anguish for myself. What about me? No one ever thinks about me. Just like this. You know, it took me actually longer than you would think to get out of it. My heart just went out. Oh my gosh, people must live like this all the time. In this sense of separation and lack, which is a complete delusion. We're never it's just literally impossible ever for a second to be separated from our source, to be different than the divine, to be out of the bliss that is our true nature. But oh, how easily we forget. And then the more we make our little barricades, the more intensely we need to make our little barricades, because once you start on that cycle of what about me, you see, it's never satisfied, so it never ends. There's just no way. I had a great disappointment in my life when I was, you know, 21. And I was just totally upset about it. And then one day I realized that what I desired to have happen had ceased to exist because all the people involved had changed. And there had been a certain confluence of harmonious energies, but all the individuals who'd created those harmonious energies were now different. And there was no way. It just simply didn't exist. And I thought to myself, if I'm weeping for the loss of something that doesn't exist anywhere on heaven or earth, I will start crying now and I will never be able to stop. Because what would ever stop me? There would be no end point to those tears. And I'm a practical person and I just stop crying over that. But you see, once we start down the road of the lie, the great delusion, I can do this myself, then we're always, definitely, we're the leaf trying to be the tree. I just think how insecure that is in those poor little leaves, the one outside my house, you know. They're bright and green right now. They think they're going to be there forever. But nah, before too long, we all know what's going to happen. Pretty soon it's just going to be branches out there again, and all that's going to be there is the source. So if we live in the source, this comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes. Have you noticed that? It comes and goes, comes and goes. I said recently, David and I have lived in Palo Alto 27 years. Oh my God, 27 years. Comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes. I remember Ananta, who's approximately my age, was speaking to a group of people, and there are a lot of people in their 20s, and he just sort of very cynically said, enjoy those bodies while they're still working so well. Just like that. You know, while you can. But if we live in the origin, you see, what difference does it make? That's the guru power. That's the divine power. Do we need that? Well, to Depends how happy you want to be. Depends how much you want to weep. That's the soul's long journey. I recently was in company with people who'd suffered a very deep setback in their lives. Lifetime of work hadn't really come out the way they'd hoped, you know. And I thought of the phrase from the Festival of Light, soul's long journey. Soul's long journey through time and space. Soul's long journey away from our home in God and then back again. And how long is that journey? How arduous? How many tears do we shed? You see, it's much more in our hands than we realize. You know, these are waves of consciousness, and we can ride them in, we can ride them out, we can ride them in, we can ride them out, or we can stand at our point of origin, where the divine intersects with ourselves, and that point of bliss becomes ours. God bless you.